I'd like to call to order the work session on June 7th, 2016. And we've got a work session item with the Virginia Daisy Bikeway Project Preliminary Design Concepts with staff Emma Newman. Ready?
Thank you. Michael Labler is also joining me.
How's it going, Michael?
So our project team for the Virginia Daisy Bikeway Project is myself, transportation planner, Michael doing traffic engineering for the project, and then Laurelyn Spiro helping us with communications as well. And she couldn't make it tonight, but we'll update her as well. So I wanted to cover a little bit of the project background, since I don't believe that this project has come before the Planning Commission, and if so, it has been a long time. The city applied for funding for the Virginia Daisy Bikeway several years ago, and then thought that we weren't going to get it, but then through the Transportation Enhancement grant program through the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee at the state level, they were able to allocate funds to the project after all. And then since then we've had some staff transition, but now it's kicking off, we're getting going, and we're here to give you an update on where things are at and where they're headed. So the bikeway project itself is from 32nd, shown up here on the screen, all the way out to Bob Straw Parkway along Virginia Avenue, and then it turns into Davy Street approximately at 42nd. So it's one east-west corridor that is connected, but it does shift names halfway through. The project itself is focused on really providing a safe bike facility for people with all ages and abilities of riding bikes, so that they can feel comfortable. It's a good alternate to Main Street for people who maybe don't feel comfortable riding on the current facilities provided along Main Street. And then it will also tie into the Mill Race Path project that Lam Lyon's working on that will come in at 32nd and Jasper. So this really ties in a key connection in our bike network across the whole city with an east-west backbone. If you have the Mill Race Path from downtown to 32nd and Jasper, go up 32nd a little ways, turn on Virginia, and all of a sudden there's a really good backbone to work off of. So the project itself is moving into some design concept development. We hired Alta Planning and Design, and they work nationally on bikeway projects, and they're based out of Portland. They helped provide kind of concept development. We provided feedback, really made sure to emphasize our priorities of the community, focusing a lot on the 42nd intersection, since that is identified by staff, our transportation system plan, and the community members along the corridor that we've been speaking to as a large safety concern. So we're doing corridor-wide treatments, but also really focusing on the 42nd intersection, and we'll talk about that when we go through the design. We're kind of midway through the first round of outreach. We developed the preliminary design concepts that are before you this evening, and then have taken those out to an open house, done postcards, mailers, electronic updates to people who would like to receive information about the project that way. Have met with the property owners at the 42nd and Daisy intersection, since they could be most impacted as far as property for this project. Generally speaking, the project is not looking to change the curb line very much. It's not going into people's front yards. I know that's been an early concern. I've received some phone calls saying, are you building Harlow Road on my street? And that's not what we're doing with this project. We're really trying to emphasize traffic calming, enhancing the neighborhood environment. People have articulated the concern about speeding along the corridor, since it is relatively straight and it's parallel to Main Street. Some people use it as a speedway currently, and the neighbors generally want to ensure neighborhood appropriate speeds, so traffic calming is emphasized throughout the design. Additionally, the project is also improving the pedestrian safety and usage of the corridor. There are some sidewalk gaps along the corridor, and we're looking to fill those in and do ADA ramp upgrades as well. As far as timeline, so we're here before you this evening, and then we're also going to City Council next week, and then we'll go to the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee. They did a site visit and have provided some preliminary feedback as to what they'd like to see with the corridor, but this is going to be our meeting where we really kind of look through this preliminary design concept and get a lot of feedback from the committee as well. Then we'll go into design refinement based off of input from the community, yourselves this evening, and the city council, and further narrow this down to a concept that could then move forward into further design and engineering, and then hoping to go to construction next year in 2017, depending on where we get to with what we would like to build and the funding available, and the time that it takes to do the design development. It may take until 2018, but we're gonna keep aiming for 2017 at this point. So, any questions about kind of project scope, background information, any of that at this point, before I walk through the design?
We're talking about tentatively planning construction in 2017, and is funding still an issue, or has funding actually been allocated for the project?
So there is $710,000 coming to the city from the Transportation Enhancement Program that has been secured and allocated to this project. Depending on some of the treatments, and specifically looking at the 42nd and Daisy intersection, depending on what we do there, we may need some additional funds. There are some SDC funds that would be available to help with that intersection specifically. And then there's also some stormwater treatment funds that could complement this project and help with some of the treatments along the corridor. So we're looking to kind of be most cost effective to address the needs of the corridor. In our transportation system plan, there's a separate project that's actually called out. There's the bikeway project, and then there's a separate project looking at roadway improvements to 42nd and Daisy. So with this project, we're attempting to accomplish both of those for a lower cost, but it might take a little bit of looking for additional funds to really build what we want to see out there.
So at this point, you really don't have a total budget for the project because you haven't settled on all the...
Correct. We're still in the concept development and feedback stage, so we don't know what our funding gap is, if we have one.
We also have funding, correct me if I'm wrong, to do paving on the street as part of our regular preservation project. That was going to happen in 2017 anyways. So being able to wrap all of these things together in one means we only disturb the citizens once along the corridor. We're able to have cost savings in terms of striping, restriping with new striping, as opposed to putting back something that have to rip it out to do this. So we're really trying to combine to get the best bang for the buck.
Correct, and that funding is secured for the overlay already as well. So we have funds available or allocated to the project, but we don't know exactly where we're gonna end up as far as cost estimate.
Thanks. Does this corridor tie into the Hall Road at all? Yes.
Correct. And as I walk through the design, I'll show how Good. That ties in and how we're thinking about that connection through this design. Okay. Well, if there are no more questions at this point, I would like to go into the design and walk through the different things that we're considering. And then open up for more discussion focused on the design itself. And I'll, once I go through the design, I'll do a little bit more summarizing the outreach that we heard from the community at the open house and from phone calls and emails that we've received so far. But I think it's helpful to know what the feedback is in relation to. So this is starting at the west end of the corridor. William Lane is just past 32nd here. And we're looking at intersection improvements at 32nd. Overall on the corridor, we are attempting to provide that, you know, neighborhood feel, the all ages and abilities bike facility, and traffic calming, and then making sure that we're also maintaining where it makes sense to do so on street parking for residences, because we've definitely heard that as a priority. So a lot of the segments along here that you'll see maintain the vast majority of the parking. There is some parking consolidation, but at the end of this, I'll go over the parking utilization data collection that we looked at and have built the design in such a way that accommodates the current needs plus some. So at this end of the corridor, I'll jump to the next slide. This shows what we're considering for a design. It would look similar to this with rapid flash beacons. So if you're walking to or from Willam Lane from the neighborhood, you'll be able to activate a flashing crosswalk, and cars would yield and need to cross more easily. It would also provide the opportunity for people who are biking, if they'd like to use that activated crosswalk, they could get up on this kind of shared use corner here or here. There'd be a little bike ramp. You could get up there, push the button, and then use that crossing. So families who are biking with kids and really want to make sure that they've got time to cross and it's safe to do so.
This is the south entrance to the Will Emily.
Correct.
Right.
And it doesn't align directly with
the parking lot entrance.
Virginia, right?
It does align at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where you pull into the parking
lot. The south entrance
lot.
Does align with Virginia.
It does.
So both here and at 42nd, too, those are not necessarily force merges for the bikes. That the bikes also have the option of using
Correct.
The sidewalk crossing.
Correct. So with this treatment, if you're a confident cyclist and you just want to move through the intersection more quickly, you can see that it's clear to go. You can pull up to the intersection and stop at the stop sign and use it as you would today. Mm-hmm. We are looking at narrowing the kind of entrance a little bit with this bulb out treatment, which provides that bike ramp. Mm-hmm. And also with the pedestrian crossing islands, that really enhances the safety of the crossings, as well as provides more of a gateway treatment into the neighborhood, saying, you know, we're transitioning to a neighborhood feel. You shouldn't just be whipping around the corner and continuing to speed at the same speed that you're going on Main Street or 32nd. So continuing down the corridor, this is 35th Street, and we're looking at doing a mini roundabout, which we'll have a photo of in a moment as to what that might look like. Along the corridor, there's some stop signs currently, such as at 37th Street. And because we want to make this an easy-to-use bikeway, we are considering flipping those stop signs, but providing the mini roundabouts and some raised crossings to prevent enough friction in the corridor so that people will go slowly along the corridor, but not have to actually stop as frequently. Getting down to 38th here, you can see I would be looking at a raised crossing. So that would be an ADA-compliant crossing that motor vehicles and bikes would have a light kind of speed cushion to go over to ensure that the people who are currently going above the speed limit would not feel very comfortable doing that with this new design. There's mini median islands just added in right there at 40th Street to provide, once again, a little bit more friction in the corridor. At 41st, adding in another mini roundabout. And here's a picture that kind of shows what that could look like. It's enough to just say, hey, you can just slow down and navigate this intersection slowly, make sure that people are yielding. But it's not the type of roundabout that you would see, you know, 58th and Thurston Road that is, you know, larger and planted and all of that. So that's what we're thinking at this point.
Is there a raised surface in the center of that, though, something that just keeps somebody from...
Yes, there is. And this is different than some of the things you've seen in Eugene, which are much more pronounced and have landscaping in them. They're still meant to give a physical and a contrast on the roadway, but for emergency services and anybody with a trailer or a large truck or a moving truck coming through, they're still navigable. They're kind of like the truck aprons on a regular roundabout, very not as extreme as those, but still something physical there that kind of mentally puts you in a different place.
Thank you.
And then that brings us, so this, the Virginia kind of side of the corridor from 32nd to 42nd, we're looking at doing the shared lane markings, which help show people who are riding where it's appropriate to ride, making sure that you're riding further out, you're more visible, not in the door zone, and potentially riding where if someone opened their car door, all of a sudden you would hit their door. So it's really encouraging people to be a little bit more prominent in the street if they're riding a bike, and also letting people who are driving know this is a highly used bike route, and be looking out for people and making sure that you're sharing the space respectfully. So the reason we looked at this treatment along the Virginia side of the corridor is because the average daily traffic was counted as a little bit over 1,000 vehicles per day on average, and that's an appropriate treatment for that volume of traffic to have that shared space. We're also looking at the tree wells. I'll go back to the beginning for a second. I think this is a slightly larger tree than what it would actually look like, but adding in some tree wells within the curb-to-curb space to visually narrow the corridor a little bit, but still provide essentially parking bays so that people would still have, you know, lots of on-street parking, but have a little bit visual narrowing to help lower the speeds. So getting to 42nd, as you'll see here, the average daily traffic on that point in the Daisy Street portion of the corridor is over 3,000 vehicles per day. And with that rate of kind of vehicles moving along the corridor, typically you want to see a separated bike facility, because if you're navigating the street without that, then it doesn't feel as comfortable. People are passing you fairly frequently, especially during the busier times of the day.
This is just prior to the S curve.
So the S curve is coming 42nd comes up here, and then you see it coming into the intersection right at that point.
All right.
And that's where the visibility concerns are, because people can't see the intersection in time to actually be able to react to people who are crossing, or especially currently taking the left turn from Daisy on 42nd is a dangerous maneuver because of sight visibility concerns and the speeds that people are traveling moving into that intersection. We've met with the corner property owners and residents, and they, hear honking and screeching and have vehicles ending up in their property not too infrequently. So they really would like to see something done. And I'll talk more to that in a little while. We're also looking at some places such as right here, maybe because there are no residences right there, there's no driveway, there's not really much happening, potentially adding in some stormwater treatment, such as a bioswale treatment, to help visually narrow the street a little bit, to help with some of the water runoff as well, and help with aesthetics of the corridor, make it feel nicer. So as you see, we're transitioning to bike lane facilities at this point. So we have four different design options that are under consideration that we'd like your feedback on this evening for the 42nd and Daisy intersection. The first option is a roundabout. It would be a single lane roundabout. It's a fairly constrained space. And this would require some corner property here, here, kind of on each side a little bit, maybe not even touching that one. This is still a concept phase, so if we choose this option, going into further design, we figure out exactly how much would need to be taken. We have talked to both of these property owners. This lady said, please, if the city can take out my front bushes that I fight with all the time, I'd love to see that, and I'd love to see a roundabout, because that would solve the problems with people running into her fence because they're not moving through the intersection properly. We just met with her yesterday, and she was like, yes, please, make it happen. This lady over here is also amenable to different ideas. She came to the open house and is curious to just kind of see how the development of the project goes forward, but would like to see safety improvements and is open to this idea as well, most definitely. This is a photo looking from the south, as if you're coming into the intersection here, as to what that might look like as well. Anything else on the roundabout that you want to?
Not as of right now. Okay. It is very preliminary, but this gives you kind of a rough view. Things may change a little bit, but we do have the available room within the area. I don't want to talk about specific elements and preferences or anything like that until we get through all of them and hear what you guys have to say.
This option 2A would be a full signal with bike crosses. So bike crosses are a treatment that is used to position bikes in front of cars so that they can proceed through the intersection and not have to worry about a right hook movement. So if there's a car sitting here and they're going to turn right onto 42nd Street, if while the light is red, the bike can maneuver in front, then they are able to proceed through the intersection, and then the car can safely take the right turn and not hit the person on the bike. There would be push buttons for bikes to activate the signal so that people would know that there's a bike present. Let's pull up the signal call and make sure that they get a green light. It would narrow slightly the crossing distance for pedestrians traveling up and down 42nd, but in this design there's no kind of pedestrian refuge island or crossing for the east-west movement along the Daisy corridor there. Our option 2B is a pedestrian hybrid beacon. So this option would be probably slightly less expensive, but it's primarily focused on providing people walking and biking an opportunity to activate a signal that otherwise would be black. It's like the one in Glenwood if you're coming into Glenwood from the university. Someone can activate the signal, but most of the time it's just sitting there black. If it's activated, it does the flashing back and forth, the solid red, people can cross, and then as it starts flashing again, people need to stop and proceed with caution. So that's another opportunity that wouldn't serve some of the automobile traffic in the neighborhood. That's trying to make this kind of move through the intersection as well. And this, both of these designs suggest not providing an arrow for that left turn movement, which I think is important. It still could be done. There's nothing physically stopping it. But there are concerns with the visibility of people coming out and then taking that left with the corner coming into the intersection. And then this option three, the pedestrian and bicycle signal. So this is kind of similar, but it would bring the bikes into the middle of the intersection for the crossing treatment where you can see the green. This allows, all of these options allow emergency vehicles to move through just fine. People move out of the way and they can just go straight through the middle. So that's not a concern. And that would provide the opportunity for bikes to activate a signal and move across the intersection, as well as pedestrians to have that improvement for the crossing. Questions on any of these different intersection treatments?
Yeah. On the roundabouts, I know there's been some perhaps safety issues with moving the crosswalks further from the center of the intersection. Is there any more data on that now to say whether that is a fairly reasonably safe pedestrian?
So you got to separate yourself from a single lane and a dual lane roundabout, and then the speeds associated with it. When you have a single lane roundabout, usually you have one car worth of stacking. Double lane, try to do two. At the roundabout on Harlow and MLK, I think it's the first time in the nation anybody ever put up a rapid rectangular flashing beacons in each of the corners on that. But all of the predominant research in terms of roundabouts shows that not only vehicular safety is increased, but also pedestrian and bicycle safety. Mostly that has to do with the speed reduction and the changing of the mental perception as you enter one into a more alert condition. So often people will get uncomfortable, and since the cars don't stop, there's always a perception of that. But to a certain degree, that's what we're looking for, is to put them in an alert condition, make them feel a little uncomfortable. And that does. Roundabouts do see sometimes a higher frequency of crashes, but those crashes are often very low and minor in terms of injury or severity, and often property damage only, as opposed to a lower occurrences of much more severe crashes, fatal crashes at red, due to red light running at other signal lights.
Yeah. So I was really concerned with pedestrian safety because of the way the crosswalks are kind of removed from. Like, for instance, if someone's taking a right turn, they're not right next to where that pedestrian is crossing. So if the pedestrian's crossing down here, they're kind of committed to the right turn because they're looking left to see if they're clear.
Yeah.
And they kind of find themselves there with the pedestrian.
Yeah, from what I know, the double lane is a little different than the single lane, and then the double lane, you're able to flatten out and take a little faster speed. It's a single lane. Usually don't have as less, so the separation between them, you also don't want to put it too far away where then they can accelerate out of the roundabout at a higher speed and under higher severity. So,
and Commissioner
Steve, Stephen.
I heard the question, but I didn't hear the answer. How far away from the traffic is the crosswalk going to be?
Well, it's too early for design, but typically it's at least one car's length. So it's at least a 25 foot, according to your analysis procedure, you have 25 feet from the edge of the travel lane to at least the first one, and that's meant so if one car does have to stop, it doesn't back into the roundabout during that time.
I've seen a lot of this overseas, other places where they put the crosswalk away from the intersection.
Even farther.
They put a little fence in there so people can't sneak across. It works pretty nice.
Yeah. You know, we're always welcome, and we're really early in the design phase, so as we move forward with things, as you know, good suggestions, and if you've seen other things somewhere else, then
that's
more.
I brought back pictures from Australia all around
the
about.
So with the, I know the one on Pioneer Parkway in Harlow.
Yeah.
Is that one, like, I think that where I get nervous when I come into it is some of those pedestrians and bikers, they'll press that button, the flash just turns on, and they immediately go into it.
Yeah.
Is there a signal for them to tell them to wait, like a pause, like a 5 seconds before it gives them a green? I don't know if that would be like, I bet that would be helpful because
so,
they just immediately go into it. And,
we go into a state of, that can get rather technical in terms of flashing yellow is a warning. Yeah. It's not a full signalized condition. So if you are going to institute a red condition, you need to first have a yellow phase to allow the drivers to stop. That doesn't always work well with a roundabout, which is meant to be continual flow. So there's design characteristics that can sometimes give the indication to the pedestrian that the signal's on, but often, and there's some debate in terms of the RRFB world and the yellow flashers, whether or not to put a side flasher on or not. The predominant engineering opinion is to not to, because you don't want to give them the impression that a car can stop. You want them to look in the direction. You want them to not have a false sense of security. They've activated the signal. It's essentially the same, according to state law, as them putting their foot in the crosswalk, which by law means the vehicles must stop. In a roundabout situation, to create a yellow then red situation, you'd be pretty much giving up the entire continual motion aspect of it. But that's kind of the crux of that. It gets kind of complicated when you get into, then you need a controller, then you need the phasing, you need the distances for dilemma zone and other things associated with the signal.
One thing to note with the rapid flash beacons is that if you're a pedestrian and you push the button, there's an audio that says vehicles may not stop, make sure that you proceed with caution.
There is.
There's a warning to say you shouldn't just launch yourself into the intersection.
I've had ones where the bikers don't even stop, they just hit it and immediately go into it.
So state law at some point does cover that as well, in that you can stay on your bike and ride through a crosswalk, but you have to be riding at walking speed.
Okay.
Which, if you've ever tried to ride at walking speed, it's pretty hard. So we have had at least one bicycle incident at the Harlow Pioneer Parkway where, in fact, the bicyclist was cited for not going at walking speed.
Because I've had a close call with that word. This is fast.
Yeah, it was fast, and I'm project lead for the Main Street Pet Crossings, and we tried to design in things like we put the push buttons at the back of the walk so that they have the walk and then the bike
distance
lane before you get there and other things like that. But once again, in the roundabout, even if they do hit it in that, the speeds at which, and you're at the magic speed of 30 miles per hour is the fatal speed for, you know, a pedestrian getting hit. Roundabouts are mostly designed to keep the internal circulation at around 15 or 20. So you still could have an injury, you still could have a severe injury, but the chances of that being a debilitating or fatal injury are much less. But obviously it still is a concern, and it still is a requirement that people stay, you know, vigilant, both the pedestrians, bicyclists, and the motorists.
Of course, the question is, how many bicyclists know that they're supposed to be at walking speed? I mean, I think skateboarders are even more of a risk because they zoom wherever they go. They're zooming whichever direction they want to go, and they're not at all considering, well, I'm going to walk my board across or anything like that. They go. So, I mean, I realize they're at their own risk, but there isn't common knowledge that what the circumstances are in many cases.
Yeah, human factors are the hardest things to deal with in transportation. They really are. Color of clothing, different types of modes, different behaviors. So we do our best to design and put in the features such as the weight.
I mean, common sense tells you if you're a bicyclist or a skateboarder that if you have an incident with a vehicle, you're going to lose.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
physics works out that way.
Yeah.
So generally, I would say, you know, I concur. I'm not going to restate what's already been said. I agree with some of the perceptions of the crosswalks close to the roundabout. However, I think a large two-lane roundabout like the one on Harlow is substantially different than a single-lane roundabout like this. You know, it's and so, you know, of the what's been presented here, to keep traffic flowing and provide safety, you know, I like the roundabout design personally. best in this particular situation.
So I will also point out that all of the signalized options require, and I'm saying this very strongly, require an advanced signal head to warn on the S-curve before you can actually approach that point to let them know that that's activated. In all of the signal applications, you're relying on them stopping for a light, whereas the roundabout is a physical feature that forces the slower condition.
I mean, imagine as a cyclist, you know, I'm the guy on the crazy bikes, you know, the calming effect of a circle is really nice. I mean, you know, I've done that, you know, on a bike, the two-lane one up there by Harlow, and there are times, and I'll kind of base it, you know, on the density of the traffic on whether I take the circle or whether I go take the crossing. The crossing does, the audible warning is very clear, so, you know, you can't prevent stupid. But you know, if you're familiar with this particular one, you know, what's there now, you know, the sidewalk is for information only, please feel free to ignore, and they do, you know, the idea that we can calm the traffic significantly down to roughly the speed that I'm pedaling. And, you know, I like those things.
Yeah, I like it for that one, too. That's a hard intersection. If you're going down Daisy, the turn right or something is real good because you got to look up. People are coming down pretty quick.
And they come from that south end and they don't even slow down.
I really like another thing about this in that it gives the bicyclist the option of using the sidewalk or the street.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that should be pointed out is the cost of a signal for the underground work is really significant. And it also requires a lot more maintenance to replace the lights, and there's a danger of poles getting hit, et cetera, that wouldn't occur with the roundabout as well.
Do we have any bike boxes or any center lane bicycle intersections in Springfield?
There are no bike boxes currently in Springfield. There are some in Eugene.
Yeah.
And the center lane treatment does not exist
at
this
point. Like MLK in Portland. Yeah. So I like the roundabouts because I like more than anything building a culture of understanding how to navigate these things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see Springfield having a ton of center lane bicycle intersections. Bike boxes I actually like, but I just don't see as many of them coming as roundabouts, so I like more than anything the consistency. It's just keeping with a culture of how you get a car or on a bike, how you get around Springfield.
Younger drivers, that's all they'll know eventually.
There'll be no one complaining about roundabouts in the future.
Maybe this is a good time to share a little bit of the feedback that we heard from the community with in relation to these different designs that's also included in your packet. And then we also met with Fire and Life Safety and police officer who works this area as well to understand what their preferences and opinions of the different treatments were. For Fire and Life Safety, you know, all of these designs would accommodate emergency vehicle response. So they didn't have a strong preference either way. All of them would work for that. We made sure to design it in such a way that those vehicles could maneuver it. And they're already doing that at different places in our community already. The police officer we met with definitely strongly supported the roundabout because there are a lot of people racing in police chases along the Daisy Street portion and Virginia Avenue as well, because it is that parallel to Main Street. It's up in the middle of the night, you can go without any stoplights having to stop. And so they're doing chases along here, and they're like, well, if you put a roundabout there, that's where the chases are going to end. It's going to do our job for us, essentially.
Like the one that just ended in Jasper in 42nd.
So that's what the police feedback we heard was. As far as the feedback from the open house, which was primarily neighborhood residents, we had 35 people there from along the corridor. And there was kind of a mixture of people liking the roundabout and liking the full traffic signal. There were some concerns with regards to this design because it would be right only for vehicles and people are trying to access different places in the neighborhood. So we did not prefer that crossing treatment. And then they wanted to see something that would really provide, you know, enhancements for all users. So that's what we're attempting to do with this project, is do the roadway project and the bike project together for the least amount of cost that we can figure out how to do a robust treatment, but do it in a cost-effective manner. So I'd say, you know, there was support for the roundabout, support for the traffic signal. I think the people who were less in favor of the roundabout have that concern of, you know, not feeling fully comfortable moving through the roundabout. And as you were speaking to, the more consistent that we have throughout our community, the more that people get to practice using a certain treatment, the better people will get at maneuvering. And it does lower the speed, so we heard support for that as far as all the user safety. Anything else as far as... Overall, the community has said, you know, this is a safety concern. Please address it with this project.
I had a question on the, I guess, the road fees. Is there a reason why you don't necessarily, like, just where the curb ends right here, have that section as the bike, and then the tree right here? You know what I'm saying?
Like, put the bike behind the tree?
Yeah, put the bike behind the tree. That way it's almost a designated lane.
Separated, like, on the east end of this.
Yeah. I just don't know why. Is that not a good concept for some reason?
So, I think you're skipping ahead to this.
Oh,
kind of
sorry.
Bike lane, kind of along the segment of Daisy, which is a great segue. It's good. Keep moving because the time's clicking. We're looking at bikeways continuing east on Daisy and kind of having some of those tree treatments still to keep the corridor looking consistent, but providing parking bays with some consolidated parking on one side of the street or the other. If you were to put the bike lane right up against the curb and have the tree further out, then that would mean that the parking lane would be further out as well. That could be looked at, but I think having the bike lane further out, because there's so many driveways along this corridor, provides better visibility for people backing out of their driveway and having a little bit more distance between the back of their car or the front of their car, depending on how they parked, and moving into the bike facility area.
It's something that we could ask of Alta and see what they feel like, because, you know, sometimes putting the parking out there also works as kind of the tree well too, and provides, you know, some friction. There could be some concerns about proximity of the bike lane to the driveway in terms of pulling out in the sight vision as someone's going by, maybe a line of parked cars on this side and you're protected by them. But then somebody's turning into, they don't see the car as they come around that for a right hook into a driveway. So sometimes it's best to keep the bike lane next to the travel lane for the right hook reasons. But that's definitely a question
we could
ask Alta and see if they've got any examples.
I know some concerns.
I wonder, like, with kids, you know, like, kids are going to be biking. Are they going to feel more comfortable biking, you know, on a traditional bike thing, or would they be, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think comfort-wise, usually... you know, most groups are really feel more comfortable when they're in a fully physically separated path. But it's whether or not you can physically separate them for a long distance, and then how many access points. And then if you put the parking in between there may be issues with door swing on both sides. So not only do you have door swing into the travel lane, but you have door swing into the
bike lane.
The bike lane as well. But, you know, it's a good idea, and we can definitely talk to Alta about, or are there opportunities for some places on the corridor, because there's a lot of different unique spaces along this corridor that have unique possibilities, some setback sidewalk corridors, some curbside, some places where it's wider, some places where it's narrower, so there may be a scenario along the corridor when that's the preferred option.
Yeah, I think you want to look at that as well as far as parking, because people are fairly used to parking right up against a curb, and there might be a situation where some people get it and park in the appropriate space, and then some people be in the bike lane, and then all of a sudden you're kind of double parked and having confusion, potentially. But we'll bring it back to our project team and discuss that further.
Okay. Do you have something to say?
I was just curious if there were any 36-foot cross-section examples where it's not a shared travel way with the bike and the car. In town, do we have any?
36 where it's not shared with the bike and the car.
Right.
All of these
cross-sections shared travel ways.
So the Virginia portion 36. Of the corridor is looking at the shared road treatment, the shared lane marking. The bike lane portion is the higher vehicle volumes. I'm looking at bike lanes for that reason. I don't know the width of Centennial further east, but I know that they're is parking and then bike lanes with the travel way in the middle, so that's approximately, I don't know if it's exactly 36 feet.
You're asking for a local curb-to-curb cross-section that has a physically separated bicycle facility.
Okay.
That's quite a challenge there. I gotta think about that.
Probably if we had one, these guys would have suggested it as one of the options, because clearly it's for the bicyclists, obviously it would be something that they'd like.
Yeah.
Maybe motorists would like it too, because then they don't have to share the travel way, but it's just hard to imagine it hitting the curbs.
How is yours? I mean, for instance, is this sounds like what you have out towards Bob Straub? Is that the same thing?
Yeah, so maybe I'll just keep going through the rest of the design. We'll get to that and then talk about all the different elements, loop back to places. So once again, this is playing just a little bit of a median island at that point, having parking consolidated to one side based off of what we observe with parking utilization. Moving forward, looking at doing another raised crossing treatment similar to what was back at 37, doing one at 46th here. This is an area kind of by the wetlands there, approaching where the Weyerhaeuser Hall Road comes in, where we observe no one parking because there's no residences, there's not much going on there, there's not much reason to park in that section. So we were thinking about putting a median on that curb to really slow people down and use the space accordingly. And then this is where the Weyerhaeuser Hall Road comes in. And we're looking at providing another raised crossing at that point, which would have the same frequency along the corridor. Every few blocks you'd see either a mini roundabout, a raised crossing, some sort of treatment to help maintain those lower speeds. And this would tie into the future improvements of the Weyerhaeuser Hall Road at that point. And then the Booth Kelly Hall Road also comes down along this section and ties in at that point. So eventually we'll have off-street connectivity going out to Weyerhaeuser toward Jasper, as well as the Daisy Street, so that people can access the Thurston neighborhood more easily. There was more parking observed along this section as well, so we went back to the shared lane marking treatment, similar to Virginia Avenue. This is also a section of the corridor where we did another vehicle count right here, and it was down to 1,500 vehicles for average daily traffic, so it does drop down once you get further east from the 42nd intersection. Looking at another mini roundabout at 49th Place. Moving along, here's an interestingly configured mini roundabout because of the offset intersection. So similar, but designing it according to the specific location that we're looking at. This is a location that currently is very narrow. The right-of-way actually narrows up because this property comes out further than the property next to it. So if you're looking to fill in the sidewalk gaps there, adding sidewalk within the right-of-way is what this proposal is showing. And then narrowing it up so that there wouldn't be parking right here. There isn't right now, really, because it's such a confined space. If you're parking there, your car's probably going to hit. And just delineating kind of a slight jog in the road that's already naturally there to help provide slower speeds once again. This is something that we received feedback at the open house with regards to other neighbors in this area saying, you know, please talk to this person and take their property. We want to see it widened at this point. So that's something to consider as well.
So there wouldn't be, like if you were going north on 51st Place, you couldn't actually take a left with this design?
You probably still can. It's the same kind of mini roundabout idea, but you most likely you'd have to go over the island or really kind of sweep around.
Okay.
Because it's all striping or it's all very, very low-lying physical change. It's not anything that's like a post or anything that your tire
wouldn't be trapped. No left turn.
Okay.
It would encourage not doing the left turn, but it would still be possible.
I wondered why they didn't consider maybe just a raised crosswalk or something like that as a
these are all
calming.
Suggestions that possibly could in here. We've all looked at this and said, oh, this is...
Because it's offset, we're looking at, okay, what can we do with this intersection? What makes sense?
It's kind of a diverter.
It's an oval bow.
Yeah.
All Albany just put one of those in their presentation about it. And then another raised crossing at this point as well. There's currently a striped crosswalk that is not ADA compliant, that doesn't really conform to any of our standards for striping here. And then over a little bit further down at this point, so we'd be aligning the crossing with the center, which is the logical location for that. So here are two different photos. One concept that we're looking at along the corridor that we want your feedback on is the potential to use a slightly different color of asphalt on the side of the street to delineate that parking space, and that helps visually narrow the space as well. So that's food for thought. We're just throwing some creative things out there and seeing what you think. Continuing down the corridor a little bit further, this is what would be 54th Street, but it doesn't exist as a street. So it ties up to the shopping center. And we'll be looking at the potential for a future path connection to tie into a raised crossing here, so that people could walk and bike on a, you know, paved surface up to the shopping center. And right now it's just lots of footpaths, and we could potentially add a little bit of lighting to that area to make it safer as well. And then along this section, which I think is what you were referencing forward to, is looking at buffered bike lanes. So this is a double kind of wide paint and providing more space for people. There are no fronting driveways along this section. We did not observe any parked cars either. So it's an area where the street appears to be very wide because there's nothing really between the curb and curb space. And people are getting the visual of Bob Straub Parkway coming down not too far ahead. So we thought that the additional delineation and additional space would be helpful.
Is your trailer parks on both sides of the road there, is that correct?
Correct, and they face inward, so their access.
They're backing, yeah.
So actually, the state law requires driveway access into the mobile home parks. Mobile homes in parks can't take direct access on the driveway. And also, they were not allowed to use the street park. Just the state law.
Which now provides a nice continuous curb line that we don't have as much concern in this area with regards to people backing in and out of the driveways.
So to follow what Nick was alluding to earlier, you know, you have the buffer right here, but you know, so this would be a scenario. It's a little added cost, but you could put in like a physical barrier in between the bike lane and the travel lane instead of the buffer, which would give you that full physical protection. And be probably very comfortable for somebody, and much more, feel a lot better having like a curb or a landscaping strip in there. But it would be more cost, and there would be some storm drainage issues that you have to deal with.
That's similar to, so there are a few different options. Option one is just the buffered bike lanes, the wider striping for both sides of the street. Option two here, we currently have an 8-foot sidewalk on one side and 6-foot on the other. We could add a narrow planter strip in that space. I think it would be more challenging. We did look at the opposite with the planter strip further out and this bike lane internal to that buffered space. I think there might be some concerns with regards to sweeping that area, which is pretty tight and narrow. So that's something that we were thinking about and got some preliminary feedback from operations and maintenance of, you know, that's not preferred, maybe doable, but not as easy to maintain. And then, so if we went with option two with more greenery on the side, it would have 6-foot bike lanes on either side, but not having that additional buffering space. So that's something to think about for feedback as well.
What would the flexible delineators be? Would those be like the tall thing, yellow delineators?
So typically lanes would be white. The flexible delineators would be, you know, just like a white post about, you know, 3-4 feet high. Mm-hmm. They'd probably be knocked down, probably the ones with a ball joint. Have you ever seen tough posts? Kind of cool thing. You can hit them at 55 and they pop right back up. And I have some private experience of making somebody very angry of putting one in, and they tried like multiple times in the videotape and watching it pop back up. It's kind of cool, but that's what the delineators would be. It just gives you more of a physical presence. And if the bike lanes were right next to each other as a cycle track, that would actually make it a cycle track as opposed to a buffered bi-directional bike lane.
Mm-hmm.
which has no physical separation.
But the same thing could be accomplished by those raised pavement markers, couldn't it?
Sort of. Yeah. The RPMs would give you the visual reflective back, but it wouldn't give you as much of a physical object to separate the two, mm-hmm. two facilities.
Okay.
So in the last couple of treatments here, looking at another raised crossing, especially people coming off like Bob Straub Parkway or traveling at fairly high speeds, coming into the neighborhood context, so we want to really signalize this is a neighborhood, drive neighborhood appropriate speeds. We looked at the parking utilization here and would consolidate the parking to one side. There's currently no parking on either of these loops, but this would more than accommodate the vehicles that were observed, that were primarily parking on that north side. So that's where we, at this point, decided to show it, but are open for other ideas. Lastly, this last page shows the parking utilization and walks through how we're, you know, in a lot of segments, there's no significant effect of parking availability. It's similar to what you'd see out there today. And then some areas we're consolidating, but there would be more than ample parking available. I think I looked at the percentage of one of these, and it would be, you know, with the implementation of these treatments, we'd only be utilizing about 11% of the parking space available. So that would provide additional capacity.
Any estimate of what a fully configured stretch like this would cost the taxpayers?
So
you have seven, you know, I mean, it's going to be a couple of million dollars, isn't it?
Yeah, and then that's kind of the cost balancing of everything that we're doing
sure.
here. And so there's things on the list that may come off or stay on, but the a general cost estimate is part of the scope for the consultant to put together for all of the treatments. And then that's also why we're looking at other funding mechanisms for the larger dollar amounts, such as the roundabouts, maybe some intersection treatments. Also working with MWMC for some of the stormwater planners. It's an opportunity to work with some of their permits and treat some more of the water coming out of the roadways.
There's a lot of ways to leverage that funding, but what's the overall, do you have an overall number for all the treatments for the corridor?
We don't have that, and you know, this is really, although it looks fairly detailed, it is still a concept and saying, okay, here are four different options for 42nd. Which direction would you like to see us moving? Because we're not going to fully detail
you
out.
You have a consultant on board that's assisting with that?
Correct.
Who is that?
It's Alta. Alta Planning and Design is nationally known. They help to write the NACTO guidelines for bike and ped bikeways. They're top of the line, probably up there, number one, maybe
good.
Number two in terms of planning and consultants for bike and ped projects.
Good. Thanks.
A couple of things. Number one is I was involved in the work on the TSP, and one of the focuses of that project was connectivity. Now, I'm reading that on the eastern end of this project, it's future work to connect the end of the Straub Parkway and create connections there. On the west end, this project ends at 32nd Street, and it sounds like an indications are that the desire is to have people head south to the trail, the new trailhead that would ultimately reach the riverbank path. Mm-hmm. Is there going to be any signage for people who are not familiar with the streets as to where, in other words, are getting dropped off at 32nd Street with any indication of where to go next?
Yes.
Because the other option is to go out to Main Street, which is not the preferred choice because that's the reason for this whole project, presumably, to keep bikes off Main Street. But are there going to be any connectivity between 32nd and Virginia and the trailhead at the end of 32nd?
Yes. So we're looking at wayfinding to help people make that connection more easily and understand where is the next place to go once you ride this segment. That was great. Now what?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then another thing that we've been talking a lot about, people may ask, well, doesn't the city own Booth Kelly Hall Road? And currently, the path that's being constructed, 232nd and Jasper, actually goes south of Agnes Stewart, and the Booth Kelly Hall Road then extends up north and then curves down to the south end of the Willamette Lane Fields. And that still is planned to be paved in a bike and ped multi-use path. And then that extends all the way out to the Weyerhaeuser Hall Road, south along that corridor. We have a lot of citizens who's asked, well, why not that project? Well, that project doesn't have paving funding associated with it. It does not have connections to the neighborhood because half of it's on one side of the rail. There's a rail crossing at one point there, which we probably have to deal with the rail, which is usually a difficult thing to do. And then it switches over the rail to the other side. It does, and it will be a great amenity in addition to connect with all of these things in the future. We still have quite a hefty task, and I know Emma had tasked some U of O students to work on the connection from 32nd to 28th in north of Main, to get from the end of this 32nd across Main, across the tracks, and then up into more of the Washburn neighborhood. That is something that we have recognized as a very difficult way to get through and a very difficult process and project in the future to kind of get that last connecting piece between some of our other infrastructure for bike and some of our more bikeable and walkable neighborhoods that have more of a strong grid system. It's really the pinch point at 28th and Main is really difficult to get over. So we'll have stuff to the south. We'll have wayfinding to get them to the Booth Kelly Hall Road. Someday that extra north piece that touches the Willamette Lane facility will be in as well, and there'll be a future extensions. But to your point, we do have some more work and some tough work to get up north and into some more.
Is there going to be any enhancements on South 32nd Street between Virginia and the trailhead, since it's kind of marginal right now for bicycle usage?
Other than the existing bike lane, I would have to check the TSP, but
nothing planned and funded at
nothing
this point.
Planned and funded.
And the other question I had, and it refers again to the Hall Road, I noticed in a lot of the public comments, there's questions about the redundancy of having two parallel bike corridors.
Yes.
So what is the thinking on that?
You know, one's more of a long haul, one's more of a short haul. You know, the Booth Kelly Hall Road does run east-west, but in the neighborhoods, it does not connect to that as much. And then in this area, this is a really great opportunity to do the calming to get the speeds down to what the neighborhood actually is. So even though this is a bike and ped project, for the most part, all of the elements that are associated with are really traffic calming, beautification, and getting it back to a neighborhood feel. So there's all these benefits. We don't have the funding associated with paving the Booth Kelly Hall Road. We don't have all the connections that collect all of the bicyclists and the pedestrians to that spot because they don't punch through people's backyards as well. And so that would be the rationale for it. But it definitely, it makes sense why the way everybody would ask that question. As a transportation engineer, I see the Booth Kelly Hall Road as more of a longer recreational, and this is more of a functional collection and traffic calming and added amenities. Does that make sense?
Okay, thank you.
We're going to have to wrap this up. Matt, you have one more?
Yeah. The AIS says that the feedback the Planning Commission provides tonight will be incorporated in the feedback the Council provides next week, as well as what the neighborhood has provided. Are you at a point now, based on the discussion you had with the Planning Commission, that you'd be able to tell the City Council, if they asked, what was the Planning Commission's preference with respect to these design options? Do you know what their preference is?
I'm hearing preference from several members for the roundabout treatment at 42nd. Is that shared across? Okay. I don't think we've heard maybe as much as I'd like to as far as the red treatment.
I like the red treatment.
I like the red treatment.
My big thought about the trees and the red treatment and the side is continuity. I think that if it's going from there's a red aspect, there's trees, now there's cars, because as a more casual bike rider, when I looked at it, I saw, okay, there's no cars, so as a casual bike rider, I want to be where there's no cars. and then there's a car coming up, so I'm going to have to look over and try and get back into it. So I think just having something that said this is where you go or this is where you don't go for as much of the stretch as possible would be my overall thought on like the side and the bike involvement.
I was also wondering what your guys' thoughts about the decisions of bike lanes and sharrows according to volumes. Like that right. Seems...
It looked right, and I pedaled that quarter many times.
Well, hopefully we can get another check in when you're farther along in some of these decisions.
I'd like to email you some comments. I went through a lot of things, and they're just some little details. So I'll try to do that right away, too.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thank you. This is adjourned to work session. Now we've got a...
When do you meet with Council? Okay.
Quasi-judicial.
Nick, do we have time to hit the head, or are we up?
I think we're supposed to go right now.
So I guess they're not being 16 anymore.
Email. Brenda.
Okay. Thank you. Nice, good presentation, both of you. Thank you.
See you again.
Yes.